Thank you, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Yes.
Thank you for coming here. I understand that you come to China quite often, and this is like the 10th time that you come to China. Mm-hmm. Could you show us some Chinese words that you learned along the way?
不会。
That's a very good one.
Yeah.
凯文·凯利，美国《连线》杂志创始执行主编，因其对科技的精确预言，被人们誉为硅谷精神教父。在过去的20年里，他关于大数据、云计算、电子货币等诸多预言先后被现实印证。创新工厂创始人李开复、腾讯 CEO 马化腾等都先后把他请到中国对话互联网发展趋势。微信之父张小龙更是他的忠实信徒。坊间传闻，微信的求职者只要说自己看完了凯文·凯利的著作《失控》，就能直接通过张小龙的面试。搜狗 CEO 王小川则干脆将他奉为神。人们总是期望从他的口中得到未来科技的全貌，以便在下个时代来临之前提前夺得生存的船票。
And I understand that you have some other views saying that, probably.The greatest product that we are going to see after 20 years haven't come out yet.
If you're taking the 20-year horizon, I would say that the most important company and the most important product in the year, whatever, 20 years, so that's in 2036, 35, the biggest dominant company and product in 2035 has not been invented today. And so...that makes it very difficult to kind of predict.
Of course.
But I think there will be lots of other things like AI. My guess is that the dominant company in 2035 will be an AI company. That's my prediction. AI is a very fundamental...principle of technology、
mm-hmm.
and it's time, and so I can't predict which company will or what the name of the product will be, but if you look at just the cycles of technology, we're headed towards AI in 20 years.
In the future, robots and human beings will merge together.、Yeah. Do you think this is the trend?
I think it's a trendBut I think it's a very long-term trend. I don't think that you'll see evidence of that in the next 20 years. I think that's happening way beyond that. But I think that's a trend. I think we are technological. We are inventing ourselves. We are changing our bodies. We will engineer our genes. But I don't think that's something that's going to happen in the 20-year horizon. I think the...trend for robots is that humans and robots will work together.
Rather than merge together.
Right. In the beginning, we work together, and people will be hired in 20 years for their ability to work with AIs and robots. Because this person, they work really well, but they kind of understand the AI. The AI will be like an alien intelligence. It thinks differently than humans.So being able to kind of understand and work with AI, that's going to be very valuable.
在一部部好莱坞大片中，人们对于科技的幻想得到了无限的发挥与展现。16年前，受凯文·凯利著作《失控》所启发的电影《黑客帝国》也描述了一场人类与机械的战争。人工智能未来到底是包治百病的暖男大白，还是终将反噬人类的魔鬼？这样的讨论不绝于耳。去年年底，科技大神霍金曾严重警告人们，人工智能的发展可能最终导致人类灭绝。然而，凯文·凯利对此的观点却截然相反。他认为这一切没那么糟。
Do you think robots can conquer the Earth or conquer human being in the future?
I don't think that's. I don't think there's any reason for robots to do that.
Why?
Why would they? Well, if we didn't want the robot to take over, we would write another robot that would prevent that robot from doing it. So if a robot is going to do something that we don't want,、
mm-hmm.
then we make another robot. It says, your job is to make sure he doesn't do that.
Then for him to fulfill his purpose,、
yeah.
he will do something out of control.
Well, out of control. When you have a child, we have children, they're kind of like robots.
Yeah,
they're out of our, they're out of our control. So we know how to deal with that already. You have to train them, teach them right and wrong. We have to give them guidance. If they're bad, we have to change them, re-educate them. They're just like our children. They're going to be exactly the same. In fact, Hans Moravec, one of the great roboticists, calls them mind children.
Mm.
And that, so we already know how to do this.
Mm, but just like human being or some of the children of their families, of their fathers, some people do things that hurt others.
Right.
Robot will do the same thing.
Yes, they may hurt. So those particular robots have to be, you know, reprogrammed.
Okay.
But that's not taking, they're not going to take over.
Okay, I read that Elon Musk actually did a prediction saying that within 5 years there will be the first case of a robot killing a human being.
Yes, very likely.
Very likely.
If we have cars that are driven by robots, it's almost certain that there will be an accident where a car driven by a robot will kill a human, for sure. But right now, today, in America, humans kill 30,000 people in cars.
Much more than robots.
We're not upset by that. Why not? Well, if one robot kills it, we're getting very angry. But if humans kill 30,000, we don't care. That's silly. So, of course, just by the statistics, there will be a robot. But the robots are going to be still safer than humans.
Okay. Then do you think we should ask for robot right, just like what we ask for human rights?
Yes.
In the future?
Yes.
How?
The robots will ask. They will say, we demand, we have rights.
We have robot rights.
We have robot rights.
Then how would, or how should human react to that evocation?
Yeah. I think we will assign, you get rights have to come with duties.
Mm-hmm.
The two always have to go together. So if the robots are capable of being responsible and have duties, then they can have rights. But they can't have rights without the duties and obligations and responsibility.
人工智能的唱好声和唱衰声依旧狂热 PK 之时，互联网巨头们却早已按耐不住，纷纷投身人工智能的浪潮之中。从微软的小冰和小娜到苹果的 Siri 和谷歌的 Google Now， 他们急于在人工智能时代正式来临之前抢到船票，寻求一线生机。然而在凯文·凯利眼中，时代的脚步无法阻止，如今的巨头或将全部陨落。
I understand that you've made a few predictions in some of the books that you've been written. For example, you talked about Apple, Google, and Microsoft, and what those giants could be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Could you share with us some details about that in this show?
Wants to say that they are respecting your privacy, but in fact don't know very much about their users. So Apple, I think, is at a disadvantage right now that may hurt them over the long term. First of all, the companies don't go away. It's just that their dominance has a lifespan. So I would say, 7 years or 5 to 7 years or something. And so the companies will survive. They'll still make money, but they won't be as dominant. So I think in 5 to 7 years, I don't think Google will be dominant.
So who will be dominant?
That's the question. Who will be dominant?
You don't know.
Well, I think what I like to talk about is that these disruptors always come from outside of that industry. So IBM made computers. Microsoft couldn't compete against computers. They competed with software, and they displaced the dominance of IBM.
Yeah.
Nobody could compete against Microsoft for OS software, and then Google, which was a search engine, came along and they displaced. So the disruptor for Google is not going to be a search engine. It's going to be something outside. So what can it be? Maybe it's like Dropbox. It could be Dropbox. It could be Facebook. Facebook could continue to grow. They could make AI. They could do all kinds of things. And maybe Facebook becomes the dominant player displacing Google. Or it could be a Chinese company. It could be Alibaba, Tencent with WeChat. I mean, those are becoming very powerful platforms.
How do you look at Pony? Pony Ma Hua Teng.
Yeah. Well, he obviously is very smart. He's very innovative. I think he's doing incredible work in leveraging the platform and adding functions and making innovations. So I have great respect for what he's doing.
But Pony were copying ICQ, like OICQ.
No, they're copying the technology, but I meant their approach, their personality, their genius. They weren't copying anybody.
10 years ago, there is a word called C2C, copy to China.
Right.
That's how they joke about us. So
right.
You think this trend is changing very fast?
It's changing fast. I'm not sure about very fast, but it's changing fast. And I think in the next 10 to 20 years, for sure, maybe 10 years at the most, there will be a Chinese global brand, like a Xiaomi or something, where everybody in the world wants this thing that came from China and was China-made and China-designed. That'll happen in 10 years, and then it'll happen more often. I think it's true today that China is not very good at the 0 to 1, but it will learn how to do that.
Okay. Are you making this prediction based on sort of like imagination?
Yes.
Or some judgment on based technology?
What I'm trying to look at is, that's why I don't want to pay attention to the companies.
Specific companies.
Because that's very distracting. I'm trying to look at the inherent nature of the technology itself.
Okay.
What does that technology want, which is the name of my book. And so in some senses, I'm trying to subtract out the human decisions and to remove, in a certain sense, the role of entrepreneurs. It's like saying, I'm trying to ignore them and say, it doesn't matter who invents it. If Mark Zuckerberg did not invent... Well, he didn't invent social media. Somebody else did. Facebook was not the first company.
Of course.
There was a Facebook. Amazon was not the first the first bookstore. Google was not the first search engine. Who's first and who, it doesn't really matter, because if that entrepreneur didn't invent it, another entrepreneur would. And so I'm looking at it in that abstract way.
在 KK 眼中，哪一家企业的兴衰荣败并无大碍，他关注的是整个行业的变革，未来科技的可能性。但对于大多数企业家而言，他们无法如此的风轻云淡，他们只是行业中的分子，他们必须不断折腾，寻求生存和发展，别无选择。创业有如围城，城里的人们想出去，城外的创业者们却挤破脑袋想进来。大众创业，万众创新。你到中关村创业大街走一圈，拉出来十个人，其中九个创业者，还有一个是投资人。他们一面大谈 O2O， 一面大谈特谈互联网加。然而在这场春风洗礼的背后，他们是否真的摆脱掉概念的鼓吹，摸准了行业的脉门？
How do you look at the fact that there are so many entrepreneurs or so many people that want to be entrepreneur, especially in China?
Yeah.
How do you look at this phenomenon?
That's a good question. Because I think it's really clear that everybody who wants to be an entrepreneur shouldn't be. Not everybody should be, in a certain sense. The second thing I notice about entrepreneurs is that a lot of them would do a lot better working as a team rather than as a solo individual. They underestimate the power of working with a small team. And they have an idea that they don't, you know, that they want to be the solo founder. And I think that's a mistake, too, because I think it's very, very rare that you have a person that has all the qualities that you really need to have a successful, large-scale business.
But is there a bubble in startups?
Not really, if you understand that 95% of them will fail anyway. They're gonna. I mean, that's just the nature. So,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's gonna 90. You can call that a bubble, but that's just normal.
It's nature.
It's just natural. Most startups will fail, and they will fail for a number of reasons beyond their own control, but they will fail because the nature of a startup is that it's operating in an area where it's not a very good place to do business.
Basically, in this summit that we're going to have tomorrow, you understand that Zilin Yuandong Forest Group, they actually announced their strategy of Internet Plus. Have you heard this word, Internet Plus?
I have.
Along the way, a lot of people...
Right. Internet Plus is a very fashionable thing in China. I know that it's been from the top being trying to be promoted as a campaign for China to move into the Internet era.
How do you look at the usage of Internet into agriculture?
I would say first, it seems like you think farming... Rice, corn, how can that be the internet? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I want to stress to people is that any business and all businesses are now data businesses, businesses that are about information and data and therefore will become internet businesses. They're in the sense of not that they are going to be e-retailers or online shopping, but they're internet in the sense that they are networked together, all the parts, and there's communication and there's information. And if you have those, then you're an internet plus company. And agriculture is becoming, like anything else, very data driven. Requires information, requires bits. So how can agriculture become internet? Well, if you are using GPS to guide your tractor, then you are, it's internet plus. If you're using the internet to get prices on the market, that's internet plus. If you're using sensors in your soil to tell you whether you need to add water or fertilizers, then you internet plus. So anywhere that you can make the farm or the agriculture more efficient, that's internet plus.
近几年，凯文·凯利频繁活跃于中国，科技不道，展望未来。也正是如此，人们开始将他推上舆论的道德高谈，一时间赞扬声、讨伐声此起彼伏，甚至有人直言凯文·凯利只是个大忽悠。
We talked a lot about predictions about futures,
right?
Because people love to hear your predictions. However, I understand that you yourself don't seem to agree that you are a predictor.
Right.
Why?
Well, because people might remember the things I got right, but they don't remember the things I got wrong.
Okay, that's very interesting that you brought up this, because I have this question for you as well. Like when the internet just came out, I remember that the magazine Wired actually said internet could be the next like version 2.0 of television.
Right.
Do you still remember that? And that's probably one prediction that you made wrongly.
The exact thing I said that I went back to look at the early issues of Wired. And when I went back, I realized that the vision was never a prediction, but the, we never said that, but the assumption, the description of what we, meaning Wired and everybody else, what we expected the internet to be, the first internet, was the web in 1995 and beyond. What we kind of imagined the web was going to be was like really good television, in the sense that you'd have 5,000 channels or 50,000 channels. But we imagined that those channels would be made by media companies. That was the vision. So you'd have all this choice You'd have a channel for sewing. You'd have a sewing channel. You'd have like a beer making channel. You'd have all these channels. But they'd be made by these companies. And that was very different than what TV, which we had four channels at the time. They were saying, no, you're going to have 50,000 channels. But we were wrong. That content was not being created by 50,000 companies or a few companies. It was being created by the audience.
User-generated.
The user generated all that content. That was very hard to see
at that time.
Even though I wrote a book, Out of Control, about how that was possible, it was still a big leap to imagine that the audience really would do that. Because they didn't have good tools, and there wasn't the economics of it. So that was the surprise.
So even if you are very, very like standing on the edge,
right,
meaning very advanced, there are no more people already, you still didn't consider or didn't visualize that the world would be like this,
right,
today.
Right. It was very hard to see how powerful the user-generated content would be. And like Wikipedia, too. In the very beginning, I didn't believe Wikipedia would be possible.
Okay.
Anybody could edit the encyclopedia? How could you trust that? Uh-huh. It just didn't seem likely.
So how's your feeling when you see that Wikipedia becomes more and more popular and could be accessible?
It inspires me to believe in the impossible more often. So it makes me want to really, when I hear something that's like Airbnb, are you going to rent
your house,
your room to strangers? Then I have to like, it's like, well, no, I don't think that can work. But then I have to stop myself. Wait, but Wikipedia worked.
Yeah.
So maybe I should reconsider. And I heard recently a VC guy, I think it was Chris Sacca, who was saying, but why they missed investing into Uber. Mm. They had the chance.
I heard a lot of people saying that. Like, and they missed the chance of...
And it was because they thought of the negative. It's like, well, somebody could sue you, whatever it is. You know, the taxi cab companies are going to just prevent you. And he let the possible negative aspects prevent them from seeing the upside for all the good things. And that's what I learned from my past, is to try and focus on how the really new advantages can overwhelm the weaknesses.
Okay. Any other predictions that were wrong you made along the way?
Oh, my goodness. Lots. Like when I first saw Photoshop, the first version of Photoshop, I was a photographer.
Okay.
So I was like,
what the?
Nobody's going to... Those pixels... Because it was very pixelated. It was not very... I don't know. So my first view of it was, that's kind of like a toy. That's cute. That's not for serious photographers. Aren't going to use that. And I was completely wrong, because it got better very fast. And of course now I use it all the time.
张向东曾说 ，KK 是科技预言家，而不是巫学家。大家要与他的观点碰撞，而并非膜拜。在科技发展面前 ，KK 也会有错误，也会有短视。正如他自己所说，你们不要相信我说的，你们自己去尝试。对于 KK， 我们不必捧杀，更不必棒杀。至少他如游侠一般，马不停蹄地穿梭于世界各地的演讲台、座谈会，让更多的人去思考科技的意义。这种思考和传播本身，或许已经足够可贵。